During this season where we are all physically isolated, many of us are keenly aware of the lack of touch in our lives. This morning, I watched a video with my daughter where YouTubers had the challenge of not touching five objects in front of them. The first one was one of those candy necklaces. Another was a gift card of an unknown value. And the last was this gorgeous large dog that was just all up in their face, licking them. Now, all of them struggled with each stage of this challenge. During a global pandemic, all of us have our ability to touch restricted. We can't touch our own faces, we wear gloves, we can't hug. I've been warned already by several friends that when all of this is over, I'm supposed to expect the biggest, longest hugs ever. You get a hug, the delivery man gets a hug, the greengrocer gets a hug, the barista gets a hug, we all get hugs. Now, this lack of touch has profoundly affected our lives. When we look through the Bible, we are reminded how powerful touch is. The imagery in Genesis, when God created humans, is just so tactile. In Genesis 2, "Then the Lord formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being." Both the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah have similar imagery, painting a picture of God as a potter, as clay, and his people as clay, and he kneads and fashions and molds his people. "Yet you, Lord, are our Father. We are the clay. You are the potter. We are all the work of your hand." Now, he did the same for the animals and the birds of the air, forming them from the earth, and is said to have planted a garden for them all to live in and thrive. But shortly after we read of God forming man and woman, we read of the woman adding to God's words. She responds to the one in the garden questioning God's goodness by saying that touching the fruit would lead to death. The woman had set a boundary further from God's actual command not to eat, but her boundary proved pointless as both man and woman touched, took, and ate, believing a lie that God was not in fact good and that they could find their own way to know goodness. The lying serpent was cursed by God, but in that there was a promise and a hope was given, a prophecy so early in God's story of God's people. The serpent will strike or bruise the heel of one of the woman's offsprings, but that offspring will ultimately crush his head. Touch also led to deceit when Jacob fooled his father Isaac into touching him and giving him the blessing instead of his twin brother. Touch was forbidden over and over again in the law given to God's people Israel. Do not touch the unclean thing. David, a man after God's own heart, touched and took and declared ownership over a woman's body, a woman made in the image of God, formed to be like him, formed to do good and be good. Touch is powerful for good and evil. There's something magnificent and awesome in being confronted with a holy God through touch. Moses was commanded to remove his shoes and stand barefoot, feet touching the earth, when in the presence of God's Spirit at the burning bush. A priest was instantly killed when he put out his hand to touch the Ark of the Covenant. Isaiah's lips were touched in a vision by a burning coal that emptied him of his uncleanness and filled him with the holiness of God. An angel of the Lord said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." And then God becomes man, and in his full humanity, he touches those who are untouchable and atones for their sin. He touches the blind and they can see. On his way to tenderly touch and heal a young dying girl, a woman touches his hem of his coat, and Jesus stops in a crowd and he says, "Who touched me?" The power of this touch done in faith and hope for healing, flowed from his body and into her unclean body and made her whole. While he was in the home of some of the sort of people who added to God's command and said that you must wash your hands in a particular way, a woman whose soul had been healed, her sins forgiven, approached him in gratitude and worship. As she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. The Pharisees in the house, they sneered. If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is as a sinner. Oh, he knew. He came to touch and be touched by people like her. A man, a foreigner, healed by Jesus, flung himself at his feet, loudly glorifying God, physically touching and clinging to Jesus as the source of his very life when nine others like him didn't return to thank him. Jesus, the King of heaven, God become man, lowered himself and served his friends, washing their feet with his hands. Even in his final hours when confronted with his enemies, Jesus touched and restored a man's ear when one of his closest friends had injured him. The same liar in the garden who questioned the goodness of God was about to strike his heel, but in Jesus's suffering, the sensation of being spat on, his beard being plucked, thorns smashed into his scalp, his flesh ripped from his back, forced to carry the weight of a tree, nails hammered through his hands and feet, bodies struggling with every breath. It was in fact he who was crushing the head of the enemy when on the third day he rose from the dead victorious. On this third day, his friend and faithful follower Mary clung to his resurrected body. "Do not cling to me," he told her. Instead, he had a task for her to do. "Go and tell my friends that I am alive." In his life and death and resurrection, Jesus redeemed touch by redeeming a people, making a way for them to be good and do good, to love God fully and love others fully, to use our touch not to deceive or selfishly take, but to love, filling them with his spirit to be agents of his goodness in the world. At this moment, not touching is the most loving thing you can do. Touching can kill. Not touching and being with each other in person can save lives. But that doesn't stop us from loving God and others. And the task given to Mary in the garden of his resurrection, the garden of a new creation, is ours too. Go and tell them that he is alive and our sin is atoned for and we are alive in him, new creations, to be good and do good for the glory of God in our bodies, our touch, our words, and our actions. And when this is all over, by all means, touch, hug, high five, fist bump, physically hold the hand of someone others view as untouchable. Give each other a holy kiss like the first followers of Jesus used to do. Let touch be redeemed. Let touch be good. Don't be afraid of it. Don't view every single touch through a lens of sexual invitation to sin. We are brothers and sisters, after all, part of God's family, agents of his goodness. Do you know God personally, intimately? Have you been touched by his story of restoring a people to his goodness? David, the man who touched and took what was not his, he was ultimately restored, his sin atoned for. He wrote a beautiful song, a song full of imagery of touch and vulnerability, an intimate relationship, one that can be yours too. It's Psalm 139. "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. And at the end of his song, he says, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting."